basis for leading the discussion. Did everyone get that email?
Yes, thank you.
So which constituencies are not represented?
Hello, it's Wendy.
We have got non-commercial registrars, IP, and business. We're waiting for PTLDs and ISP and the ALAC, but I think Wendy Seltzer should be on for the ALAC.
Yep, I think right.
Well, we know Jeff's going to be late, so who's the other registry person?
Was it David Lauder?
Oh, yeah, it was.
Hi, this is David Fairskin. I have to drop off by noon.
Why don't we go ahead and get started then? I wanted to direct everybody to the summary of points from last call email that Jeff sent out. I think it actually provides a pretty good basis for structuring discussions. If you haven't had a chance to look at it, please do so while we're talking about it. And I thought we could go through, point by point and see if everyone agrees with how he has structured this or if there are changes that people want to propose. So why don't we start with item one that he pretty clearly lays out that the work of this task force depends heavily on...
David Maher joining.
Hey, David. We're just going through Jeff's email, the summary of points from the last call.
Okay.
And we just started, so... item one, the output of this WHOIS task force depends heavily on the output of WHOIS task force two. And then he draws some conclusions that I think we need to discuss a little bit. He says the more sensitive the data, A, the more value there is to the data, B, the more likely such data is to be mined, and C, the more this impacts the privacy rights of individuals.
Can I add one more point to that list of ABC?
Sure.
I would say D, the more likely the person will make it inaccurate because they don't want that information to be out there. So if it's required to be out there, they won't be truthful about it.
But this is David Ferris. Don't we need to distinguish the data elements from the display?
Yes, and actually, Jeff goes on to do that. But I think that there's actually, I mean, I think your point is good. There are two questions here. There's a display of data, and then there's a whole other task force working on which data should be displayed. And, so we need to be very careful not to tread too much on their conclusions.
That is a good point.
So... I think a way to phrase what you're trying to get at is, I mean, about the data being the likelihood of people increasing, giving accurate or non-accurate data. I think we have to be careful how we phrase that, because the truth is we don't actually know that that's the primary reason that people... We suspect, we strongly, understand that it would be a good cause for people to give inaccurate data, but we don't actually have data to back that up, right? and so I think we need to come up with a way to phrase that actually matches what we,
Now, Barbara, one way to rephrase that would be that instead of saying the more likely it is, just say the... creates an incentive for the person to make it inaccurate.
Yeah, there you go.
In generally, sort of going back to a point you made a few moments ago, I think one of the things I really like about Jeff's summary is that it is recognizing the interdependencies among the task forces. For a while, we were kind of pretending like we could, you know, put ourselves in little boxes and go about our work. But I like this statement because, you know, it's simply a fact that the output of this task force depends heavily on the output of number two.
Yeah.
For example, if what we considered to be sensitive data were either removed from the WHOIS database altogether or completely, well, if it were completely removed, then I think the issue of access via port 43 would become radically transformed, and most of us would not have much concern about it.
Well, that's actually a question that I wanted to get into a little further in the document where his summary, where he talks about the likelihood of port 43 still being used for data mining. I don't actually remember if it was in this task force or if it was in a different one last week, where somebody brought up the point that that the registrars tend to believe that port 43 is going to be mined for whatever data is available, regardless of how valuable or sensitive we regard it. There are going to be people who are going to mine, you know, who are going to want to aggressively download the data that's available, however fulfilling that data might be. That's a point just to have in mind when we get to that section. I don't want to.
Sure, and a point that I think we discussed on the last call, and I don't think you were here, was that some of us didn't see a problem with data mining of non-sensitive data. If it's publicly available and non-sensitive, then researchers should be able to data mine that for information about how the net is being used.
Maybe we should talk about it when we get there, but I think we qualified that by saying, yeah, up to like a certain capacity of hardware.
Right. That was what I was going to get at, was that the registrars definitely have a grievance about the resources that have to be committed to that, both, you know, in terms of hardware and bandwidth and such.
Well, do the registrars have any legal or contractual obligations now to provide
data at a certain rate?
Yeah.
I don't think so.
No, it just says it has to be available. It doesn't say anything about rate limiting or anything like that. So, I mean, we can propose suggestions about that as well, but let's I'm sorry, I kind of got us off track here. Let's just kind of move through Jeff's summary, because I think it does lay out the issues pretty well. Okay, so I've added in that B creates an incentive for the person to make the data inaccurate.
Only if it's required to be displayed.
That's part of the what he starts off the sentence by saying, the more sensitive the data, you know, he's presuming that if there are no changes, like the more sensitive the data that is displayed.
That's good. Okay, gotcha.
Okay, so in such cases, there may be a need to restrict access to that data. In our call, we grouped the individual data elements of WHOIS into three categories: sensitive data, non-sensitive data, and data which may be sensitive, in effect, where there was some disagreement about it. So then he has, under sensitive data, the registrant phone number, registrant fax number, the admin contact phone number, admin contact fax number, the registrant address 91, which is the street address, and the admin contact address 91. So do we all agree that those are sensitive data?
We would expect to see registrant email address in there. In fact, we would consider that more sensitive than the fax numbers.
The registrant and admin contact email?
Yeah, because
okay.
those are you know, if we're concerned about spamming, that's the real nuisance value of it has to do with the email address. The spammers can't do a whole lot with the phone number, at least not yet.
Okay, those were ones which he had under the sort of semi-disputed, you know, or in an unclear category, but I've added them to the sensitive one for right now. Any other comments about the sensitive data? Do people feel that that's a good list of the things that we would consider primary data that needs to be redacted or somehow otherwise protected from display? No, I'm saying that wrong. That's not our purview. That's not our mandate here. But those are the data around which there's the greatest concern for how it is shared.
Yep.
Okay. Non-sensitive data. Domain name, domain ID, registrar name, registrar ID, main server name, the technical contact information.
Had a comment there. Only
okay.
There was discussion on the registrar's list this past week around the technical contact name.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Around what was the...
I'm getting to it. Sorry for coughing. They were saying a couple registrars, I forget which ones, were saying that if the purpose is, if we go back to the original purpose, and maybe we should state what the original purpose was for the WHOIS, which was to, for technical contact reasons. That's why we needed the WHOIS. So therefore, we should display the... One side says we should display the technical contact information so people could contact that guy. The other side says, well, if that is a purpose, we don't need to display that information for them to be contacted. There's other technological ways. For example, a website where you say, if you want to contact a technical contact, then this box and hit submit, and it'll get to them without telling the person who wishes to contact the technical contact what the actual coordinates of the technical contact are.
Basically, you're saying there needs to be an intermediary?
Potentially. Basically, what they're saying is, if that's the purpose, we don't need to display the actual name, address, phone number, fax number, email address in order for them to be contacted. It's not required for them to be contacted.
Well, I actually, as somebody who worked on the technical side of this, might have some problems with that just because, you are trying... I guess the issue here is what we actually think this information is going to be. The default right now is that most people put in their own information for this technical contact, that they are the technical contact for their website. But I think that this is one of those areas where we may want to make a recommendation about a best practice that isn't a best current practice, but is something that we're proposing as a way of ameliorating the personal data that goes in there. And maybe what people should be putting in their technical contact information isn't their own personal data, but the information about who's hosting their website or, something like that. That what really belongs in there, especially if it's something that's, a website that's sold as part of a package through an ISP hosting company, is the ISP technical contact information so that you can actually contact the person who's going to be responsible for taking down the website.
I agree that the technical contact should be, whoever the registrant thinks the technical contact is, whether it's, a lot of registrars are getting into hosting. You've got a lot of people doing hosting and a lot of people doing a lot of different things with their name besides, web. Web's not the only thing out there. You got email, you got all
that. Right, exactly.
So the bottom line, in my opinion, is if you display the name, address, phone number, fax number, it can be used for other purposes. That's the kind of the problem in my mind. In other words, it could be used for other people to contact that contact, not having anything to do with the domain name space. They could try, you know, selling them a car or whatever. And the name is out there. All that information's out there. So if there was a technological means to contact a technical contact without putting that information out there, why wouldn't we do that?
But how would you see that working? I guess that's my question.
Basically, it's an intermediary. That's the bottom line. Everyone contacts the technical contact through somebody else or through a website or through whatever. That's what they were saying on the registrar list. I personally, not speaking for all registrars, I agree with that. But that's why I, you know, just because there's one group says that we should get back to the original reason for having who is, and therefore we should display this. Then the other group said we could do that, but without displaying it.
I'm not the person who decides this way. You guys are. I think that I would need to see a more fleshed out description of how that would actually function.
Right. Here's an example. Instead of putting the email address, you would have a web form where you click submit, and behind the scenes, that message gets emailed to the email address. But the guy inputting the text on the form doesn't know what the email address is.
Oh, we could just go back to the original postmaster at domain, and that could go anywhere at all.
Right.
Yeah, that's pretty much what we have been, the non-commercial constituency has been sort of advocating for some time.
I mean, you put in, postmaster at or abuse at or technical contact at or...
Right. I mean, there are ways to, again, it's a sort of an access versus data elements question here. I think if it's Paul that's saying this, he's correct that you can have that information accessible for law enforcement purposes using normal procedures and so on without displaying it in the WHOIS. I mean, it's just, it's well known. It's just more... procedure and probably slower and slightly more expensive, possibly. We don't really know, but you can do that.
And what about their contact information in terms of address and phone number? And we've got that takes care of their email address. But
one way you could do that is you send a message to, like in the method I just described. The message gets to the technical contact, and there could be a checkbox that says, send me your phone number and so on back to this email address.
So how do you deal with non-compliance?
Non-compliance with...
if they don't respond with the data.
Oh. Well, that's...
Because what?
And then who do you go talk to? Because you don't have any contact information.
Right, but what do you do if it's displayed and they don't respond?
Exactly.
It's the same issue. It's just a law enforcement question.
And then how do you go about, if you don't know how to contact them, how do you go about getting that contact information if it does result in a law enforcement, and you're saying you would go through...
If it's a law enforcement thing, you're not going to get any whatever satisfaction out of the technical contact. You got to get the registrant anyway, which is sensitive. So you'd have to do the same thing in either case.
Can I ask a question? This is David Ferris. What is the purpose of us doing this type of segregation of the different elements, whether they're sensitive, non-sensitive? Because before the call today, I went back to our mandate. And I was just trying to figure out why we were doing this, given our mandate. Is it because we know that, let's say, they want to, there's this choice to go down this path, we need to look back at the contracts and figure out whether there need to be any amendments to allow the registrars to do that?
I think there were actually two purposes. The first was that depending on the outcome of Task Force 2 and what they recommend as the data that continues to be displayed, that our recommendations are highly tied to that. And so if they come out with recommendations that say, don't display these elements and they fit into our category of sensitive elements, then we've already worked out a strategy for, okay, if we don't display the sensitive elements, then we recommend these kinds of changes. If we do display the sensitive elements, then we recommend these other kinds of changes. I think that was the idea behind, the main idea behind breaking the data up this way.
Okay.
And does anyone disagree with that?
I agree with it.
Okay. I think there is also the question of once CF2 comes out with their recommendations and they require some change in the data displayed, that is something that this task force has been charged with saying, you know, identify how the contracts need to be changed. And if we identify which data elements we consider fall into each category, I think that gives us a running start on saying, you know, where the changes in contracts might need to be focused. So I do think that it serves both purposes. Okay, so for this technical context information, I'm putting in as a suggestion to have an intermediary.
Instead of displaying the technical contact,
mm-hmm.
I'm bad with words. I don't know.
Let's just go ahead and say it.
Instead of displaying it, the data would still be there. It would be. Mm-hmm. You could still get it if the same way you got the other sensitive data. But if you wanted to send a message to the technical contact, a means would be available via a third party, and that third party could be the registrar.
Okay.
Are we going down the slippery slope of offering solutions?
I know.
Technical solutions or?
Well,
the point is, it's possible to not display it. I mean, you know, the port 43 specification came out before there was even a web. So I see why you needed it back then. But now, with the web, there's a way. It's pretty obvious. Because it's so obvious, it doesn't. It's just.
Morning. Tony Harris, Johnny.
Hey, Tony.
There's just a way to do it now without displaying it. So why display it?
Okay.
Question of sensitive or not, just make it sensitive and use this other method to contact the technical contact.
Okay, I've put in the suggestion. I think we are probably going to have more discussion about that, whether the technical contact, how to manage the technical contact information, because I think there's a couple of different points of view about how necessary it is to have that information readily available, like visible or you know.
And in a lot, you know, I also...
Yeah, so much of this depends on what Task Force 2 decides to do. That
I agree with
very
that.
Hard to...
But also, it seems, you know, in some cases, this is just, can I spend another 2 minutes on this? Sorry. It's not on this particular technical contact. I want to expand it to the registrant and the other contacts. Because if we make that other contact information, the registrant and the admin, sensitive, I would guess there'd be some kind of procedure to get it in order to send a message to those people, even though they might be in compliance, let's say. So maybe we could use the same method to contact those contacts as well. And then if they're not in compliance, then you could use the method to get the sensitive information.
Mm-hmm.
Because I would guess a lot of times, whether it's intellectual property people trying to contact them or anybody else, that It has nothing to do with compliance or legal stuff.
It seems to me that there are already ways to do this, though, through a generic address at the domain name, and we don't need to layer additional processes on top of that. For if somebody wants to be contacted, there are plenty of ways of getting in contact with them, and if somebody doesn't want to be contacted, that should be their prerogative.
Okay, why don't we continue through the list, because I think some of the things that we're getting into here are may fall better under our suggested remedies rather than actual. I'm not sure we're getting much further in the discussion of which, how to categorize the different data. So what I'm taking this as is that you're suggesting that the technical contact information
be moved to data which may be sensitive.
Correct. Yeah, that's what I was going to say. Okay, so let's move on to data which may be sensitive. In here we have the expiration date and the creation date of the domain name, the registrant name, the registrant email address, registrant address line 2, which is the city, state, zip, and country, and the same information for the admin contact. And the current suggestion is that the technical contact information as well be regarded as potentially sensitive. So is there anything in this category that people have maybe reached a conclusion on about whether they regard it as sensitive versus non-sensitive data?
You're in the non-sensitive list now?
We're in the data which may be sensitive.
Which may be sensitive, yeah. You know, just a word about expiration date. We had some discussions about that and found that there were both reasons to make it public and reasons not to, and we think it's in the right category here. It's kind of in an ambiguous category. Same with creation date, but there are reasons to go in both ways on that one.
What about registrant name? Would we consider that a sensitive thing? If
well, I would. This is Wendy.
Yeah, it's again, it's one that could go both ways, but
okay. Let's. I can't think of a good way to address that as a category other than to say that we probably have to decide whether to treat it as sensitive or non-sensitive in terms of data display in our recommendations, not so much in our personal feelings about whether it's sensitive or not. So, let's just think about that as we go through the rest of this. Item 2, Jeff has on his list. It is believed that if only non-sensitive data is to be publicly displayed through whatever means, the data itself has little value, is less likely to be data mined, and has little effect on privacy rights. Therefore, imposing restrictions on access to non-sensitive data may not be necessary. Is that something that the group as a whole agrees with?
I agree with that, but could we add beyond the technical capacity of your average registrar or something? I agree that we shouldn't have access on it, but they can't just overload our systems by querying it.
Aye. Julia?
Um,
Actually, since it says may not be necessary, that maybe that's enough.
Well, no, I think we actually want to point out what the issue is here. The reason it might be necessary to restrict this data, even though it appears non-sensitive, is because of the potential burden it imposes on registrars. Okay, so I've got a little note in there about that for right now, as a placeholder. And then item three is, to the extent that restrictions are imposed on access to those information, this should not be taken to mean that we are addressing all of the privacy implications nor the entire problem of data mining. In addition, as in all cases, national law as applicable should be taken into consideration. I think that's a pretty straightforward kind of statement there.
I think it's straightforward, too, except I'm sorry, I got another comment. We had a pretty long discussion on the registrar's list about national laws, and there were some people who said, well, just because you're in Barbados doesn't mean you could get out of your ICANN contract, because Barbados laws says, you know, you can't display any who is, let's say, for example. I don't know if it does or not, but let's just say there was some country where it was illegal to display any who is. And then other people said, well, if that's your national law, then you should be able to not display any who is, and basically kind of get out of that part of the ICANN contract. So...
okay, I'm going to flag this as an implication for how ICANN contract structures.
I think that there are some complex issues of conflicts of law.
Exactly. But just me being a non-lawyer and looking at these, you know, this back and forth on the registrar list, that seemed pretty complicated. I think the bottom line would be something like, you got to keep competition amongst registrars, and if somebody gets an advantage because of their national law, what happens?
Or if somebody gets a disadvantage because his national law prohibits him from engaging in the things that ICANN requires.
That's exactly.
It's the flip side.
It takes precedent.
Well, maybe this is a naive view. I'm not an international lawyer or anything, but I just don't see how there's any issue about what takes precedence here.
When is it?
ICANN, if there is a registrar in a particular country, and ICANN says, you know, I mean, it's clearly that national law would have to take precedence. ICANN doesn't have any lawmaking authority. It has this contractual authority, and
Well, they would break their ICANN contract.
Yeah, so either they would be allowed to function as a registrar by ICANN, or ICANN would have to change its contracts.
The question is, which country's laws are applicable to the contract? That's the question.
Good point, because, you know, Enum has subsidiary, you know, we got companies in Europe. We got, you know, are we going to just say, well, we're in Europe, we're in, you know, Barbados, we're going to be shopping around for the best law to make us, give us the most favorable competitive advantage?
It seems pretty clear that this is a question we can't answer.
I'm thinking.
I just wanted to bring it up because we talk about it's national law here.
But that's what that's why I added asked that the as applicable be added last week, because of this exact conflict of laws issue.
Right. Okay, I think this is actually a question we're going to have to forward to General Counsel for an opinion about whether the statement as we have it is sufficient.
It would seem to me that one useful thing for us to do would be to try to make the contract consonant with as many national laws as we can so that all registrars are on even footing when they're obeying both their national law and the contract.
As someone who looks at laws all around the world, it's going to be so difficult to do that because there are going to be conflicting laws on almost every issue. Try and do that. If you try and look at all the laws around the world on this type of thing.
There might be some way to structure the contract so that there's like a least common denominator or something, where if some registrar is getting away with something that gives them a great advantage, the other ones could do that too. I don't know. I'm just thinking generally.
Yeah, I mean, it's whoever said we better get some legal consultation is right.
Yeah, I think we just have to ask General Counsel to help us out here because I think that there may, in fact, be strategies that address this that we're just not the right people to identify. And, in fact, it may be a much broader problem than we're giving it credit for, or it may be something that's already been worked out in light of the issues of the EU's privacy laws and stuff. So I just don't know enough to be able to say. Okay, so I've got a note about that. Item 4, to the extent that sensitive data is required to be publicly disclosed by CFTU, then at a minimum the requester of WHOIS information should be required to identify themselves to the WHOIS provider along with the reasons for which it seeks the data. Such information should be made available to the registrant whose WHOIS information is sought. And the group recognizes, however, that an exception may need to be granted to certain law enforcement officials who may need the information without having to provide the reasons to the registrant. And he says this point needs to be explored more. So I think the issues here were fell into a couple of different categories. The first was that there still needs to be a timely display of WHOIS information to the requester because some of the reasons that the data is requested require a very timely response. And then there was disagreement on where intellectual property owners or their agents fall within the exception. And then there was a question about who exactly is law enforcement and how that would be determined. And then there was a more general question about how this would be managed as a process.
This is David. I would also ask about other legitimate users of the information, and I know that we raised this briefly last week, but maybe we need to throw something in here that says if such a system were to be adopted, it should be deployed, it should be clearly defined, simple, and ensure timely access.
Well, the point of it is to block access for some people. I mean,
for those legitimate users. Okay, I'm happy to qualify it for the legitimate users.
Yeah, I guess that leaves me a little bit worried about what exactly are you qualifying? What sentence are you qualifying here?
Just this whole idea about the having to identify themselves and then et cetera. I mean, if that process is overly burdensome and there's a denial of service attack against the site, you need to make sure that it's not so burdensome that it's going to interfere with their ability to address the denial of service attack.
I having denial of service text was one avenue or one defining, like we've defined that law enforcement officers, officials may have a need for this information. We haven't defined that there may be technical need for this information, you know, like to
That's what I'm saying. So for this grouping of legitimate users,
mm-hmm.
that qualification, I think, should be incorporated in here somehow.
As I understand that this is saying there can be a whole range of legitimate users and purposes. The only law enforcement qualification was that public law enforcement sometimes needs to get identities without letting its targets know that they're being investigated.
That's right, actually.
IP community would be the same, though. I mean, as soon as someone knows that we're looking at their domain information, then you know, we can spend 6 months to a year doing background investigation. But as soon as someone knows that we're looking at them, then even if it's only a passing query, then that's the end of our investigation. It would basically mean that this information would almost certainly be of no use in an investigation. As soon as we tell people that we're looking at them, then that would cause us major problems. And also, a lot of the information, a lot of the work we do the initial investigation, and due to lack of resource within law enforcement, we then work with them to go to the next stage. So it's not just a case of the people simply are doing it for their own members. Quite often they investigate something which is then passed to law enforcement. So I think it is a point that does need to be discussed now or marked as a point that we need to discuss in more detail. But if we're doing an IP or as you mentioned earlier with the denial of service, I mean if you've got technical people or security companies watching a denial of service attack, if you tip people off that you're watching them early, then you could lose the whole thing. So I think, you know, letting the registrant of the information know that you've done a query on them is just going to tip them very early into the investigation process, which could cause you to lose the whole investigation.
Well, that's recognized in the current statement.
Well, it's not, because it says IP owners should not fall within this exception.
No, it says that's the opinion of the at-large constituency. It doesn't say that as a...
And that's fine, as long as we don't follow that side of things, as long as kind of the law enforcement slash IP slash security community is recognized in that, then that's fine.
Well, but the problem with IP is that it's not law enforcement. That's self-enforcement, and that's simply that's not the same status as actual law enforcement. Law enforcement is, you know, in a position to determine what is or is not against the law, at least in an initial investigation stage, whereas IP owners are basically saying, we think that somebody is an infringer. But that whether they're an infringer or not is yet to be determined by any kind of legal process. So there's a difference of status here that has to be sort of remembered.
But likewise, we wouldn't do anything until no information is ever used until we're 100% sure of an offense. And then we would be open up to the same, you know, if we've got it wrong and if we try and sue someone or whatever, then we're open to the same risks. But... The stage of saying, well, you know, we've been talking within the IP community and looking at the issues here, and you know, one of the big concerns is that if registrants know that we're looking at, you know, if they know that IFPI or whoever is looking at them, then you know, we've seen it already. We've made queries about domains and suddenly people move off and then they move information to another registrant or whatever. You know, we've seen it happening already. And, you know, that's where, unfortunately, we've had, you know, kind of a careless email or something go out. So if it's a very
obvious... we all understand that the convenience issues and the question is, what is the purpose of the who is?
I'm sorry, may I briefly? I have to leave the call. I apologize.
This is David Ferris. Can I ask a question? I mean, do we really need to have this debate? Because our focus is on being who is for marketing purposes. So if the IPO, I just think that we're going in too much detail on trying to identify who the legitimate users are. The only purpose that we really have is restricting access for marketing purposes. So I don't think we need to engage in this debate. We need to identify that there are legitimate uses and that there need to be mechanisms to ensure that legitimate users can get access to the data in a manner that is clearly defined, simple, and ensures timely access. It has to be another process to define legitimate users, I would argue.
I agree with that.
I think to go back to what we're trying to do here is we have to make a decision, this task force, about Port 43 fundamentally, and what any exploitation, any policy towards Port 43 is not going to discriminate among users. It's not going to have anything to do with their purposes. If we allow access, it will be used for a number of purposes, some legitimate, some not legitimate. So this task force really doesn't have any mandate, as I agree with David, I think, in that point. We don't have any mandate to determine who is a legitimate user and who isn't. But what we're trying to do, as I understand it, is we're trying to create a conditional scenario based on the outcome of Task Force 2, so that if Task Force 2 removes some things from the who is, then we have one policy, and if they don't, then we have another policy. That's what I understand is going on here, and I think that's within our mandate.
Right.
I don't think it's avoidable. I mean, we have to take into account the distinction between a who is Task Force 2 that does X versus one that does Y or Z. It would obviously be much nicer if we could just work in complete isolation. But we can't.
Okay, so what if we change the language in item 4? And the group recognizes, however, that an exception may need to be granted to certain law enforcement officials who may need the information without having to provide the reasons, et cetera, to certain, quote-unquote, legitimate users.
Could I make a suggestion? Tony Harris here.
Sure.
I would remove such information should be made available to the registrant whose who is information is sought. And then you don't need the following sentence.
Well, that respectfully, that was a compromise that made this acceptable to at large, I would imagine, to some others, that in exchange for a registrant showing to others data, he would get to see the data of those who looked at it.
Right. Well, but why is the who is, we're talking about the generic top-level domain who is, right, not from country code who is databases. Why is that, why should that have something applied which is normally included in a national law like, say, we have here in Argentina, where you have to, if somebody looks for your data, you have to tell the person who's being scrutinized somebody is looking at your data. Why should that have to apply in this case? We're talking about GTLD, who is, right?
Well, the alternative I would be very happy with is the data is not collected at all. I think we're trying to come up with ways of making it acceptable that various personal and sensitive data is collected into a registry and kept and made available to others whom a registrant may not want it available for.
Well, but if this is tending towards a solution, where either through tiered access, which is in one proposal, or some other mechanism, the current method of accessing port 43 or port 80 or whatever in bulk fashion and openly is going to be curtailed. Where is this a problem after that?
The problem is that we don't know what those conclusions of that task force are yet, and so what we're saying is that if they conclude that sensitive data continues to be displayed, that we're saying that there should still be a way to for people to access that data.
Okay, well, if this is agreed upon and it continues to be in a bulk access mode, in other words, sensitive data, certain parties can access sensitive data on a massive scale, they would have to notify, 4 or 5 or 10 million users, one by one, that they're looking at the data. Is that the implication here?
Well, the implication is that would not be feasible, and therefore they would stop.
Okay, but that's not the way it's written here. It says such information should be available to the registrant. I would read that means every single one of the registrants.
Yes, every single one whose data is accessed.
Yeah. I mean, this is just a question. I'm not making a point of it. It seems to stand out.
Didn't the former Whois task force, someone from the BC when I was consulting them, said to me that the former task force looked into some of these things and .name had provided some information on its tiered or its types of proposed solutions which were not, at the end of the day, economically or feasible? Maybe we should
there was some discussion on that.
Maybe we should look back at the original task force, Whois task force's report, and come back to this.
The original Whois task force never discussed any mechanism for identification of requesters.
I'm not too sure about that. We'd have to look back.
I'm quite sure of that. There was just no discussion of that. That point has never been raised.
I heard something to the contrary from some BC folks. I think we should just go back and look at it.
Okay,
yeah.
So who's going to take that as an action item?
I don't see that as being relevant unless what you're saying is that .name has tried to implement tiered access in some particular way. Somebody wants a case study of .name. That's a fact that we can use, but I don't see how it relates to the policy issues that are being discussed here at all.
Well, I think it's helpful in it to be informed about previous debates on similar issues that we're discussing. They've been part of the ICANN policy development process or collecting input from all of the different ICANN constituencies. I don't think it can hurt at all.
Yeah, I guess I just put this in context. There's a corpus of data called sensitive data, not displayed. And then if somebody wants to display it, they have to go through a request process in which they are identified as well as the user. I'm quite sure that kind of a process was never discussed as part of the Whois task force. And I'm not sure that is what .name does, although it might, and that information about .name might be relevant to, you know, the technical mechanics of how they actually implement it. So if somebody wants to look that up, that's fine.
So who's going to take on the work of going back and looking at the first Whois task force to see if the .name information about the burden of costs is involved?
Well, why not just send a request to .name? I mean, that would be more direct if they've actually implemented it.
Yes, I'm just asking who's going to take responsibility for that action, however they want to go about getting the information. Who's going to...
Do we have someone who was in the last task force on this call?
I was for a while.
Yeah, I was on that, Tony Harris, yeah.
Because your insights, when you look back at the report, would be most helpful, I think. I wasn't a participant there, so.
Okay.
Okay, Tony, you'll take that.
Let's restate exactly what we want to look for so I don't make any mistakes on that.
Yeah, the way I have it in here right now, it says look back at first task force data to see if this issue of sharing restricted information.
Sharing.
Right?
I'm sorry, of what? I'm missing a word.
Could you repeat that? Is it tiering?
Sharing, as in...
Oh, sharing.
Yeah, okay.
Sharing restricted information.
Has been discussed already. Particularly look for dot name information about the burden of cost involved in notification practices.
Okay, why don't you send that to me on an email? It'll be easier, Barbara.
Sure, I'm going to send it to everybody. So.
Okay, fine.
Part of the list.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Okay, item 5. The group does not propose any mechanisms to deal with who is information displayed through the web, except that it was recognized that web-based GUIs, such as CAPTCHAs, are not an effective block for data mining, although it was acknowledged that it's provided an important obstacle in many cases. So I guess we're not really taking a position there. 6. What to do about port 43? Currently, port 43 does not provide a way for a requester to identify him or herself, nor the reasons for which it is that person is seeking the data. If only non-sensitive data is displayed, there's no reason to change anything with respect to port 43, and here's where we have the, you know, except that it imposes a burden. To registrars. Registrar resources. See, if sensitive data will be displayed, then port 43 will not be able to provide the functionality described in section 4 above, which was the identification of the requester and the notification to the registrant that somebody was looking at their data. And D, the group may not be fundamentally opposed to an automated mechanism to retrieve sensitive data, as long as the requester is identified and that information is disclosed to the registrant. So that means we're not opposed to making port 43 available to people who have already identified themselves as legitimate users, provided that can accommodate the other criteria.
Actually, I think that was not a reference to port 43.
Well, it was just some automated thing, and if that turned out to be port 43, then that's what it was, and if it was something else, then, you know, that was acceptable, too, was the way I remember that discussion was going.
David Ferris, unfortunately, I have to drop off. Sorry.
Okay. And then other ideas. In addition, if port 43 were retained, the group discussed the possibility of having some central authority that is not a registry or a registrar, to approve entities that could use port 43, i.e. create a whitelist of IP addresses. In this scenario, a whitelist would be created of requesters that have proven themselves as legitimate users of WHOIS information, and this list would be provided to registries and registrars, and only those requesters sending requests through port 43 would be allowed to access the WHOIS information. Questions arose concerning A, who would operate this whitelist, B, what would be the criteria for being on the whitelist, and C, whether it was actually feasible to implement, and D, a process for dealing with abuses of the mechanism. So, I think those are all still open questions, but we haven't, in the discussion today, we haven't certainly gotten beyond that. So.
I guess the Pope would be the reply to A. Although, of course, it wouldn't be popular with the Muslims.
Right. So, I think that there's still a lot of information that, you know, a lot of discussion that needs to take place. I'd like to see some of it taking place on the list so that we can actually get people, get positions laid out in a clean enough fashion that, you know, that it's clear to people what the arguments are, where the areas of discussion are stuck, so that we're not just rehearsing them every single time we have these calls. And we have to move fairly quickly on this. You know, we have to start our writing the preliminary report effectively next week. And, you know, I think we really need to carry this discussion on further on the list.
We did run the idea of a whitelist by our constituency mailing list, and it was greeted with unanimous disdain. Just thought I'd tell you that. It was not a popular idea. I'm just scanning some of those comments. Let me see. Here it is. There are concerns about reuse of the data, which is already a question that I think Paul's questions have discussed adequately. And again, the question of maintenance of this whitelist without ICANN developing into a big bureaucratic organization was raised. How is ICANN going to determine who is a consumer protection organization in Tuvalu or Aruba? Those kinds of comments.
We've been on the call for an hour, and I think we're probably not going to get much further in agreement in this discussion at the moment. What I'd like to do is send the version that has my little comments in it back to the list. My comments are not extensive. They just raise some questions at different places. And I would really like for people to start having the discussion on the list about, you know, if in your constituency this is a major issue around a certain area, or the phrasing of it, or the or the concept behind it, you know, behind whatever's being proposed, you know, is a major concern for your constituency, either in support or in opposition. Just lay that out as cleanly as you can so that we can at least demonstrate that we've, you know, adequately told the constituencies on these issues. If we can't come up with a majority opinion, then we can't come up with a majority opinion. That's acceptable. So we need to be able to lay out where the issues are and what the disagreements are.
Okay, great.
All right, I'm sending this off, and we will have our call next week, and hopefully Jeff will be able to join us again, and we'll take it up from there. So
okay, look forward to that.
Okay.
Thank you, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.